It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Virtual tie. Here's the headlines this morning here in Pittsburgh. It remains that way right now, Brian, although reports say it looks good for Connor Lamb, but it's very close. More than 1,000 absentee ballots were being counted overnight, and reports say that has been completed in Washington County, where they say Lamb has an edge over his Republican opponent. Lamb, of course, is a 33-year-old former Marine, former federal prosecutor, who was criticized of the political climate last night during his speech in which he claimed victory. He was heavily supported by the labor unions of steel and the coal industries, and although some of his issues dovetailed with President Trump, he said our nation's contentious politics must end.
It took a little longer than we thought, but we did it.
Well, the race hasn't been called yet. As for Rick Saccone, his Republican opponent, a four-term state representative, he said he's not giving up. So both sides in a standoff at this hour this morning, and because this race is so close, it appears that it certainly would go to either a recount or a re-canvassing over the next several days.
All right, that was Eric Shawn this morning on Fox. Sandy Rios with you. He's talking about that special election that took place yesterday in Pennsylvania, and he just kind of laid it out, but let me just make it even clearer. There are 579 votes separating Connor Lamb, the Democrat, and Rick Saccone, the Republican. 49.8% to 49.6%. It's pretty close. They have 3,900 absentee ballots that still need to be counted. You know, I have to tell you, just my hunch of this, that probably is not going to go well for Rick Saccone. Because I don't think that Republicans are as good about those absentee balloting. I think some it's military ballots, as the Democrats seem to be targeting that to win elections. So Connor Lamb, as you know, I'm reading more and more about him. You heard Eric lay out his qualifications. He's a handsome, energetic, good-looking guy, former Marine, former federal prosecutor, had nothing but really praise, at least positive things to say about Donald Trump. This is the Democrat. And he also supported the tariffs on steel and aluminum that the president just passed. So he was supporting President Trump's policies. And of course, that made it possible, I guess, for labor unions to not be confused. I think Rick Saccone does not have a history of supporting labor unions in Pennsylvania. That's a very big deal there. So we'll see. And I think a recount, I think they have interesting recount rules. Certainly, it's close enough to ask for a recount, unless the absentee ballots come out and Connor Lamb moves way, way ahead, which he might. But the recount, something like you have to have three voters from each precinct kind of file a petition for a recount, and they only have 5 days to do that. So I really don't know what's going to happen in that race, but it was a good night for Democrats. There's no question about that. And I think, this is just another sign it's masterful to choose Connor Lamb in that district for the Democrats to do that. And that's how strategic I see them being in this 2018 race. They started this under Barack Obama. Maybe they were doing it before that. I don't know. But micro-targeting. I mean, just thinking of every angle in every district in order to win. And they have the money and the resources to do it. So it's pretty interesting. So that's what happened. At least that's what's happened so far in Pennsylvania 18. And we'll find out, I'm sure, later on in the day, you know, how those absentee ballots panned out, because everyone will be eager to find out. Well, the big news, of course, yesterday, the last 24 hours since we last spoke, is this. I'll let John Roberts tell you a little bit.
It was not a surprise. It had been rumored for months. But the sudden announcement that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was fired sent shockwaves through Washington.
We got along actually quite well, but we disagreed on things. When you look at the Iran deal, I think it's terrible. I guess he thought it was okay.
President Trump made the decision last week. White House officials say Chief of Staff John Kelly called Tillerson, who was traveling in Africa on Friday, to tell him he'd have to step aside. Officials say Tillerson asked Kelly if the president would wait until he returned. Tillerson touched down in D.C. at 4 a.m. today. 5 hours later, President Trump tweeted, Mike Pompeo, director of the CIA, will become our new Secretary of State. He will do a fantastic job. Thank you to Rex Tillerson for his service.
I wish Rex a lot of good things. I think Rex will be much happier now.
Meeting the press this afternoon, Tillerson did not sound happy in the least.
I received a call today from the President of the United States at a little after noontime from Air Force One. What is most important is to ensure an orderly and smooth transition during a time that the country continues to face significant policy and national security challenges.
The White House says the timing was driven in part by last week's announcement of a possible meeting between President Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un. President Trump wanted a new team in place for that process and the numerous trade deals the president wants to renegotiate. And he simply loves Mike Pompeo.
Tremendous energy, tremendous intellect. We're always on the same wavelength. The relationship has been very good, and that's what I need as Secretary of State.
All right, that's in part John Roberts' report last night. So Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, has been let go, shall we say? You know, when you're hearing the normal things that we always hear, the president fired him in a tweet, instability in the White House, disaster. Who could? This man can't run things. Now the grown-up is gone, and on it goes. But in fact, there was a statement issued by the Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs at the Department of State, who said in this statement that Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, did not speak to the president this morning and is unaware of the reason. That basically claiming that Trump didn't speak to him, that it came as a surprise. People on the left, the press, is reporting that he was fired in a tweet. But the White House is saying that's not true. John just reported, as a matter of fact, what the White House is saying, what I believe is true, that John Kelly called him on Friday to tell him that he is going to be dismissed. And he was in Africa, so he cut his trip short and came back. And there are a lot of reasons that President Trump let Rex Tillerson go. We're going to talk with Fred Flights in just a few minutes from the Center for Security Policy. So I guess I'm going to save my remarks for that a little bit. Let's just to say that they disagreed on major, major issues. And Tillerson really was, I think, operating his own shop. Like, no, the president would say he wanted to do thus and such on some issue and some area of the world, and Tillerson disagreed, so he would do his own thing. And that happened repeatedly. So there's a reason why Rex Tillerson is gone, and there's a reason why John Kelly called and let him know. I was amazed at how emotional Tillerson was in that statement. You know, you don't like to see, I don't know, I think it's better for the country, but you don't like to see someone in a situation like that. I'm sure that Tillerson has a lot of strengths. In fact, we'll talk with Fred Flights about that when he joins us. So just hang tight. We'll talk about it. The new nominee for Mike Pompeo has gone to the State Department. Mike was a congressman from Kansas. Interesting. He's got interesting qualifications. He's very well educated. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the details. I think he went to Harvard, some such place. I think he served in the CIA, some such place. How about that for specifics? But Mike Pompeo is a favorite of the president's. You know, I'm not sure. I can't put my stamp of approval on him completely for a number of reasons. But he has been loyal to the president. He certainly agrees with him on many of the key issues. So he's going to now be the head of the Department of State. And then Gina Haspel is the nominee for the new head of the CIA. Now, this is a bit controversial among national security experts who are conservatives. Maybe we'll get into that with Fred in a second, too. But Jennifer Griffin had a good report on her last night. So this will give you an idea. Let's listen.
Secretary Rex Tillerson, with only hours remaining,
leading the State Department. Clip 4.
There are few images of Gina Haspel, a career intelligence operative who worked for years in the shadows, leading the hunt for the world's most wanted terrorists. Last March, as deputy director of the CIA, she sat two seats down from Defense Secretary Jim Mattis as he welcomed the Saudi Crown Prince to the Pentagon. If confirmed, she will be the first woman to head the CIA. She joined the agency in 1985. She's 61 years old and was once the deputy director of National Clandestine Service. She oversaw covert action and ran the CIA black site in Thailand known as Cat's Eye, where Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded in 2002, along with Abdulrahim al-Nashiri, best known for the USS Cole bombing. Both remain at Gitmo.
She is someone who was up to her eyeballs in the torture issue. She was in charge of the CIA torture site in Thailand, a place where one man was waterboarded 83 times.
Haspel wrote the cable ordering the destruction of waterboarding tapes in 2005, according to her boss, National Clandestine Service Chief Jose Rodriguez, who wrote about it in his book. Quote, the cable left nothing to chance. It even told them how to get rid of the tapes. They were to use an industrial strength shredder to do the deed. Haspel's many defenders say those black sites have to be seen in context. The Justice Department and President Bush authorized the actions. The CIA believed at the time the U.S. was facing another major attack in the wake of 9/11.
Gina is somebody who I have great confidence in, can steer the ship of state of CIA, and having a professional there, having somebody who is apolitical and nonpartisan and is not going to engage in policy, I think will be seen as a breath of fresh air to a lot of people at CIA.
Okay, so there goes the story of Gina Haspel. We'll be talking about her, I have to tell you. That was John Brennan's voice at the end, talking, singing the praises of Gina Haspel. And could I just say that that's a red flag? That's a major red flag. John Brennan, former CIA director under President Obama, member of the, voted for the communist candidate in 1980 in the U.S. presidential race. I've told you repeatedly, often, about what a bad person and what a, probably the most, damaging CIA director we've ever had, ever, and certainly my lifetime, maybe the history of the United States. And he's endorsing Gina Haspel. So we'll have more conversations about her, you can bet that. But you're going to hear, you know, things that are going to make you think, wow, this is great. Because some of us feel that enhanced interrogations were necessary after 9/11. We've not been so offended by that as others have been. And so then we think, well, she's really good on this, so she must be really good, right? Well, we'll find out about that. Maybe we'll touch on that with Fred also in just a second. Today is the day that schools, kids around the country are planning walkouts because of the Parkland shooting, high school shooting in Florida about, 3 weeks ago. And, of course, their walkout is carefully, or, you know, no, the kids are planning all of this. They're orchestrating. Remember, these 16 and 17-year-old kids, they are the ones organizing these nationwide protests and, of course, the march in Washington on the 24th. So just in case you got confused, I guess it's you know, the PR firm that was hired by the some of the parents of the kids, the entertainment industry PR firm, and all of the millions of dollars pouring in from Hollywood celebrities, the help of Debbie Wasserman Schultz to know how to craft their words, the Women's March, Planned Parenthood, Federation of Teachers Union. You know, they're giving money and guidance, but really, trust me, it's just the kids. It's just the kids. And there are no political implications. It's all about, it's just a pure desire to help the students and the families of the victims in Parkland. Well, it may be for some of the kids, that's for sure, but for all of those entities jumping in, it is purely political. It is using the tragedy to advance political causes, mainly to get rid of Donald Trump, to get rid of guns, because we all know, of course, that the only reason that the shooter shot all those students was because of guns. It had nothing to do with his mental state, nothing to do with the failures of the FBI and the police department and the disciplinary process. But then I could go on. So that's happening today in your public school, so watch for it, and it'll be interesting to talk about it tomorrow. All right, be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hey, my name's Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't they do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome. MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7. So if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees. Put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, you shall not murder, across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Educators in Duluth, Minnesota stopped just short of burning books the other day, deciding instead to drop two American classics from its required reading list. The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and To Kill a Mockingbird have been given the heave-ho. Parents and students reportedly took issue with a certain racial slur used liberally in both books. The school district erred on the side of feelings, concerned a child might feel humiliated or marginalized upon reading the offensive words. Now, the idea that To Kill a Mockingbird, a book that sought to expose racial injustice, is now considered racially offensive is beyond words. And quite frankly, the community's indignation seems a bit disingenuous. I mean, these parents so offended by the racist words in their child's reading list, I wonder how many of them are equally indignant over the racially charged words in their child's musical playlist. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now he's beginning his big, big and most important journey. This is where you were meant to be, right here today at this crossroads in history.
I'm not going anywhere.
How long will you stay for?
I'm still here. Nothing has changed. I've said 2018 is a year of execution. My commission as Secretary of State will terminate at midnight, March the 31st.
Rex and I have been talking about this for a long time. We got along actually quite well, but we disagreed on things. So we were not really thinking the same.
Yes, I think not. Sandy Rios with you. That was Rex Tillerson's voice and also the president's voice. And as we discussed a few minutes ago, Rex Tillerson is no longer the head of the State Department. And that's a really interesting, you know, that was a bit interesting history. Remember, he was on rocky terms with the president several different times, and you heard clips in the past that sort of laid the groundwork for that. There were many times when Rex Tillerson did what he wanted rather than what the president wanted. And I think that's at the heart of the problem. I think the president's comments were quite honest about that we didn't agree on things. Fred Flights is the Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs at the Center for Security Policy. Fred is a former CIA analyst and knows so much about national security. And by the way, he's written a brand new book called The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare, What Trump Must Do to Reverse Obama's Strategic Patience. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Fred.
Hey, Sandy. Good morning.
I want to ask, we're going to reverse the order of questions here, and I just want to know, were you surprised that, really, that Rex Tillerson was able to survive as long as he did?
I am. I think he should have been let go a long time ago. Look, I understand he's a good man, and I think he meant well, but he was a bad fit for this administration. Donald Trump was elected president. He makes foreign policy, and it's fine to disagree with the president privately, but Tillerson was saying things publicly that disagreed with the president. He criticized the president in fairly crude terms and was quoted by the news media. I mean, this is not the way a government runs. And, you know, he wasted a year at the State Department. One of his most important tasks is to staff state with people who will implement the president's policies. Instead, he spent millions of dollars paying consulting firms for a reorganization plan that's never going to be implemented. He wasted an entire year and undermined the effectiveness of the president's foreign policy. My view is good riddance.
Yes. You know what, Fred, that surprises me. You know, I heard these stories about complaints reported about how the State Department is really getting thin on personnel, people are not being hired and all of that, but I did not realize what you just said. It sounds like Tillerson was trying to bring it into corporate America standards because he was a corporate executive. Is that right? He was trying to make it more corporate?
He came in and he was appalled at the State Department and its inefficiency, and he's right. The problem is a massive reorganization needs congressional buy-in. You should have buy-in from the building, but you have to have buy-in from Congress. Congress is never going to implement this. And the sad thing is whatever he does would be reversed by the next secretary unless it's approved in legislation, which it isn't going to do. So he wasted a year and he wasted a huge amount of money doing it.
Do you think, it's funny, Fred, my impression also, but I don't know, just it's an impression, was that Tillerson, like many wealthy businessmen, I think sometimes are really clueless on political issues. I don't really think that they're tuned into those the way many of us that are in public policy are. So, but the question is, however well-intentioned, did Tillerson do anything that you thought was good in terms of international policy?
Sure. He made a lot of strong statements on Iran and North Korea. I think he was involved in some productive discussions on a number of issues on the president's behalf. It's just not fair to say he failed across the board, but I think in terms of promoting the president's policies, being behind him, was undermined by the fact that he was saying things publicly that undermined the president and did not staff the State Department, which was a big, big failure.
Yeah. And we just need to mention, just touch on, if we could briefly, just to make this really vivid, the president alluded to them not agreeing, but Fred, they disagreed on so many major things. And I think of Qatar. Now, that's a little hard to explain, but maybe in a sentence or two, can you explain why that was such a big deal?
Well, I mean, Qatar is a state that has been sponsoring the Muslim Brotherhood and other organizations suspected of having ties to radical Islam, and that's sort of the president's view, and Tillerson didn't seem to share that view. And again, it's fine to disagree in private, but there has to be an administration policy. We can't have a Secretary of State rolling out his own policies that conflict with those of the White House.
Well, and I think in the case of Qatar, where there was a real effort to cut them off and a real opportunity to sort of triangulate them, and he actually went over the president's head or under his feet, I'm not sure where, and undermined the ability to stop them from funding terrorists. So it was a really big deal, not just a difference of agreement. And then the Paris climate thing. Say a word about that.
He disagreed with the president on pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. He apparently disagreed with the president meeting with Kim Jong-un, and he's always disagreed with the president on the Iran deal. Now, we knew the president's position on the Iran deal when he was elected. So basically, if you decide to work for this president, you have to be prepared to implement that policy. But he and H.R. McMaster came in the government in direct opposition to the president on the Iran deal. I mean, on other issues too, but I think that was the biggest difference.
So, wow, this is so complicated. I don't need to tell you. All right, let me just talk for a second on the Iran deal. Aren't we coming up on that deadline every 3 months, every 90 days, every 6 months, whatever, that the president has to recertify the Iran deal? Are we coming up on another deadline here?
There's another deadline coming up in May when the president has to recertify the Iran deal and extend certain sanction waivers. And I'm sort of hoping that the decision to let Tillerson go means that the president is finally going to withdraw from the agreement. He worked with his advisors. They urged him not to withdraw. And, you know, he listened to them. He didn't go over their heads. He took the advice very reluctantly. He gave the State Department and foreign diplomats and Congress time to fix the deal. Now, you and I know the deal can't be fixed. It's so flawed. But, look, the president can say, look, I gave them a chance, and they didn't fix it. Mm-hmm.
So you think maybe this time, with Tillerson gone and Pompeo, who I think has been very vocally an opponent of the Iran deal, that actually we might pull out of it. I'm guessing, Fred, that the reason the Europeans have dug their heels in so much on this, and the reason Tillerson probably cooperated with them and undermined the president on it, was financial, all the financial deals and entanglements in terms of business interests. Am I getting that right?
Well, you know, I'd like to think that's not the reason. I haven't heard that. I will tell you that I think Tillerson is too close to the foreign policy establishment. He was chosen because of the intervention, I understand, of Condoleezza Rice. Well, this president ran against the George W. Bush administration. Why is he letting former Bush officials pick his cabinet? And this isn't the only instance. There are certain salons in Georgetown, Sandy, that you and I are not invited to. You know, the liberal international sit around slurping wine, talking about how we should have a world government, and they talk about global warming. Rex Tillerson probably goes to some of these events.
Yeah, so he doesn't need to be there. He is. It's like oil and water. Really, it is. And, of course, he's not the only one. We could get sidetracked with McMaster. Hey, any headline on that? I mean, he keeps bubbling up, the head of the National Security Council. How many times have we discussed whether he's staying or going? How about the relationship between him and Tillerson? Do you know anything about that?
I think McMaster's on his way out. McMaster and Tillerson were equally problematic for the president's foreign policy. And I'm hoping that announcement will be made soon.
All right. Now that takes us to the Pompeo has gone to state. I've already told my audience about he was a congressman from Kansas and has a, you know, on paper looks really good. We'll see what that means. The president is real high on him. But Gina Haspel now is going to be the head of the CIA. And of course, Fred, the first thing out of the box is people are talking about how she signed off on enhanced interrogations, i.e. waterboarding. And for some of us, that's not a bad thing. But the thing that gave me great pause was that John Brennan was on television last night singing the praises of Gina Haspel. John Brennan, the most wretched CIA director, arguably, the United States has ever had. Have you got any comments about Gina? Are you holding your powder?
I can't really comment on Gina Haspel.
Okay. Then I won't ask you to. But I will ask you this, because you mentioned this a second ago, and I wanted to talk to you about it. You've just wrote an article in Fox about this new group that's formed with the acronym NSA. It's a National Security Action is what it stands for, and it's a group of, well, here, you tell us. What is this?
This is hilarious. 50 former Obama officials have formed a group called National Security Action with the initials NSA, and three of the leading founders are Ben Rhodes, Susan Rice, and Samantha Power, who abused the real NSA to spy on the Trump campaign and to unmask them from NSA reporting. So I wrote an article saying, well, I wonder whether they're going to include an apology from this organization for their abuse of U.S. national security agencies. And then I looked at the mandate of this organization. There's nothing in there about reforming U.S. intelligence, aggressive oversight, protecting the privacy of Americans from intelligence agencies. So I have to wonder whether part of the purpose of this organization is to get them back into government so they can abuse the NSA again against Republican presidential candidates and office holders.
It really is actually, to me, sinister. You know, Ben Rhodes, the writer who became the national security expert, and Susan Rice and Samantha Power, who we now know were named on these in these unmasking, illegal unmasking, whatever, directives, whatever you want to call it. They were up to their ears in it, which is what you just alluded to. I'm just driving it home. And that they should form a group with using the same acronym as NSA is just really sinister to me. I always think of shadow government when I hear something like this, Fred, like, a counter to the government that exists and to ready to take over at any moment. That's what it reminds me of. Maybe I'm seeing helicopters or something. But you talk in your article.
I'm looking forward to getting into a debate with one of these characters on the air and asking me about their NSA.
You think you'll get to do that? Are you planning on? I mean, because you've been on television a lot lately. Is there any plan for that?
Well, I some of them refuse to go on the air, conservatives. We'll have to see.
Yeah, right, because they can't defend themselves because they have to lie. Well, they're good at that, though. I want to ask you about the part of your article where you talk about Obama's what's called strategic patience. It's not just that had to do with Korea, North Korea, but just give us an idea, Fred. Take us through again, really, the failures of the Obama foreign policy team, which was Ben Rhodes, Susan Rice, and Samantha Power in part, and probably some of these other people who have formed this NSA. What kinds of things did they actually accomplish when they were serving?
You know, they want to bring back the foreign policy of the Obama years. This is a foreign policy that led to the birth of ISIS because of the way President Obama bungled the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq and his leading from behind strategy, which let ISIS surge throughout the Middle East and become a global terrorist organization. And in Asia, we didn't have leading from behind. We had America, AWOL. We were supposed to have a pivot to Asia. My Japanese friends have said to me, you know, we haven't seen any pivot. We haven't seen anything at all. And this allowed North Korea's nuclear program to surge because of President Obama's strategic patience policy. This was a policy, Sandy, to basically do nothing about North Korea's nuclear program and kick this problem to the next president. So when President Trump says he inherited a mess on the global stage from President Obama, he's absolutely right. And this couldn't be more true when it comes to North Korea, which fortunately the president seems to be turning around.
And the president, the current president, as in Trump, just give us an idea, because it's good to hear this, Fred. Some of us could mention his foreign policy accomplishments. Some might say right away North Korea at least coming to the table to talk. But other things, as a foreign policy expert, what other things have you observed that you think he's done really well?
Well, I mean, when it comes to North Korea, we had a president who threw out the diplomatic rule book and put forward a very tough policy that passed the toughest UN sanctions ever and substantially improved compliance. A lot of conservatives say sanctions don't work, and in the end, they might not work. But I think by calling out states that aren't complying, especially China, the president has really increased the pain on North Korea. And by answering North Korea's threats with his own warning, such as when he said to the United Nations, I will totally destroy North Korea if it threatens the U.S. or its allies. Remember how mad every foreign policy expert in the U.S. was after that? It had an effect on the leaders in North Korea because they respect strength, and they're worried that now the U.S. has a president that really is prepared to use force against them if they continue to threaten this country.
You know, Fred, when you track the way the past presidents, I'll say since George W. Bush, because that's how far I go back really watching this, have handled North Korea, it's been an absolute embarrassment and it's been the Neville Chamberlain, you know, a path to, you know, denuclearizing North Korea. It's been a shame. We've paid them so much money. We've given them technology, nuclear technology, somehow claiming that they're going to use this, you know, on power and not on weapons. It's really been an embarrassment. And this is the first president that's really just called it like it is. It is dangerous. It would have been dangerous during George W. Bush's time to do something but not as dangerous as it is now, is it? I mean, it would have been better during George W. Bush's time to do something, wouldn't it?
I absolutely. And there's no doubt that the George W. Bush and the Clinton administrations also handled North Korea very badly, were taken advantage of, and were very naive. But the difference is between those administrations and the Obama administration didn't want to do anything. those administrations tried to do something. Now, what they did didn't work, and it amounted to appeasement. But the Obama administration just looked the other way. And it's so much worse because it gave North Korea an unparalleled opportunity to increase its nuclear missile programs, knowing the U.S. was going to do nothing. So that's why I hold out the Obama administration as very, very different than the way these other administrations handle North Korea.
Now, let me just interject, Fred, again, that you have a new book coming out. It's not out yet, right?
It's out. It's available on Amazon.com. It's called The Coming North Korean Nuclear Nightmare, What Trump Must Do to Reverse Obama's Strategic Patience.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we should have talked about that. I didn't think it was out yet. Well, all right. So in a nutshell.
We did. I told you the arguments as we spoke.
Okay. All right, good. Well, thank you. And by the way, we're going to put Fred's latest article that we just talked about on this new organization called NSA, this counter shadow government, as far as I'm concerned. It's an article in Fox. Fred, before I let you go, there's a couple of articles that have to do with the intelligence community that I wanted to ask you about this morning. You weren't expecting this, but let me just ask you. I just read this morning that the Defense Department is now moving classified data and applications to Amazon's cloud. It's a secret cloud. I'm sure you know about it. This is not the first time. You know, Amazon has been providing. I think it was during the Obama administration that they started doing this, where all this high-level intel was, uploaded to an Amazon cloud that was, yes, supposed to be super secret. But Amazon is owned by Jeff Bezos, the owner of Washington Post. And this just and now the Defense Department, according to this article, the Pentagon is going to has chosen Amazon over Microsoft, another bidder. There wasn't even a bid. They're going with Amazon. I just want to know, as a former intelligence analyst, what you think about that.
Well, I remember the day when the CIA stopped making its own computers. We actually used to make our own computers and started using IBM's because it just wasn't economically feasible that they had to go to the commercial market for certain technology. I think that's what's going on here, but I'm very worried about it. Maybe the capabilities, or maybe the government simply can't replicate these cloud storage capabilities that industry can. But I think there are all kinds of security problems, and there could be legal problems if, let's say Amazon decides for some reason not to give the data back or not to cooperate or not to cooperate with court orders. I'm very concerned about it. I don't have the background to tell you more than that, but I'm very concerned about it.
Yeah, and the decision makers at the Defense Department have not instilled confidence in many of us during the Trump administration already. So, you know, we know just common sense would say, with Jeff Bezos being so far to the left and being such an enemy of this president and really of strong, what I would argue, strong national defense, what the heck are we doing giving our most sensitive secrets, handing it over to really what's a hostile country? No, that's not what I meant to say. A hostile entity to the president's policies. I just don't get that. And I don't know. I know, again, I'm asking you something you weren't prepared to answer, but who would decide something like that? It said it was a no-bid contract. Microsoft pulled out.
Well, I don't know who the Pentagon would decide it. We don't know what the encryption in this data is. It could be something that really can't be broken by Amazon, but Amazon would still have possession of it, and I think that's a concern given Jeff Bezos' political biases and other problems we've had with various firms holding data for NSA and legal problems with concerning the privacy of Americans. So I hope Congress will look into this.
Yeah, last question, just 30 seconds, Fred. Do you think that this thing with Tillerson and others leaving is the beginning of sort of a house cleaning? Do you have any reason to believe that?
I really do. I think the president, I think the president wanted to give these guys a year in office, and the year was sort of up in February. And I think he has a plan that's going to be replacing quite a few of them. I really hope that McMaster will be the next.
Well, I hope that with you. All right, Fred Flyd, Center for Security Policy. And by the way, his book is The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare. We'll put a link to that also on our Facebook page. Fred, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Good to be here. Thanks, Andy.
All right, see Andy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart. I have overcome the world. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. It's amazing to me. Paul addressed the fact that some would preach Christ out of selfish ambition in Philippians chapter 1. There really is nothing new under the sun. Just because something is new to us doesn't make it a new thing. The times, the attendant darkness we are facing now, and what we will face in the future may be new to us, but they are not new to God. The Lord gave us his word that in him we might have peace. He told us that difficult times would come, but he also said, take heart, because he had overcome the world. And if God be for us, who can be against us?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Announcing three new episodes of Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. These animated half-hour episodes will entertain children.
That's right!
And teach lessons about joy, patience, and the dangers of selfishness. Ryan DeFrady is a secret agent with a whole lot to learn, and he insists on working alone until he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
Mommy!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent, episodes 4, 5, and 6 from American Family Studios are available now at afastore.net.
Few people enjoy being reminded of their own mortality. But this week, Alistair Begg reveals that for those who are in Christ, there's no need to fear the end. Listen Monday through Friday as we continue our series titled Life After Death on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
Today, moral relativism and political correctness are assaulting truth. How can the world have hope when believers themselves aren't clear on the authority of the Bible?
The Church of Jesus Christ always faces a tremendous temptation to deviate from the Word of God.
The God who speaks clearly expresses God's intent in giving us His Word, and the response that is demanded of those who hear.
Nobody ever encounters God and says, that was boring and irrelevant. When people say that about the Bible, it just says to me, they've not encountered the God of the Bible.
Our faith is rooted in history, and consequently, we need to use the evidence and never be afraid of it.
The God Who Speaks is a feature-length documentary from the American Family Association, which could bolster your confidence in the Word of God.
Churches really need to see this, really need to understand what the Bible actually is.
Available now at thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump channeled Ronald Reagan yesterday when he fired Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. In 1982, Mr. Reagan sacked his top diplomat, Al Haig, for engaging in similarly rank and even contemptuous insubordination and serial sabotaging of the president's policies. In Haig's case, the last straw was his double dealing with European allies about the Siberian gas pipeline. For Tillerson, it reportedly was his perfidy in working with them and other nations aimed at saving the fraudulent Obama bomb nuclear deal with Iran that Mr. Trump rightly rejects. Every president is entitled to expect and receive his subordinates' faithful execution of his direction. For this one to get it, he'll also have to replace the enabler of Rex Tillerson's insubordination, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, with someone deeply experienced, supremely competent, and aligned with him and his policies. That man is John Bolton. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
There is nothing bigger or older than the universe. What created the universe? Why did the universe emerge from the Big Bang the way it did? We used to think that the theory of the universe could be divided into two parts. First, there were the laws like Maxwell's equations and general relativity that determined the evolution of the universe, given its state over all space at one time. And second, there was the question of the initial state of the universe. We have made good progress on the first part, and now have a knowledge of the laws of evolution in all but the most extreme conditions, but until recently, We have had little idea about the initial conditions for the universe. However, this division into laws of evolution and initial conditions depends on time and space being separate and distinct. Under extreme conditions, general relativity and quantum theory allow time to behave like another dimension of space.
That's, of course, the voice, kind of Stephen Hawking, famed physicist who is now dead at 76. Stephen Hawking was stricken with ALS. I think he's probably defied all the odds I know by living years with this disease. It usually takes people quickly, at least within a few years at the most. But Stephen Hawking has lived for years. I think he was diagnosed when he was in college. He's written a bestseller called A Brief History of Time. He's taught physics and mathematics at Cambridge. His position at Cambridge, by the way, ironically, was held by Isaac Newton in 1669. I found that really ironic because Isaac Newton was a very strong follower, believer in Jesus Christ. Isn't that something? But Stephen Hawking was not. Stephen Hawking is known for his atheism. And that's the thing that struck me when I heard that he had died today. I thought about he was a pretty vicious atheist. And I remember him talking about the glories of, and this is just odd, the wonders of pornography. He thought pornography was, I don't know, he certainly thought it was good for him. He spoke about it. He was married twice, had children. And I just want to read you just one quote from him. There are many I could choose, but here's one. I believe the simplest explanation is there is no God. No one created the universe and no one directs our fate. This leads me to a profound realization that there probably is no heaven and no afterlife either. We have this one life to appreciate the grand design of the universe, and for that, I am extremely grateful. You know, it's interesting, isn't it, that he chooses that wording. We have this one life to appreciate the grand design. If there is a grand design, I wonder who Stephen Hawking thought was the designer. It was all random, an accident, this order of the universe. And of course, this goes to the age-old argument between atheists and people who believe in God and believe there was an intelligent creator. And how sad it is, and tragic, really. Stephen Hawking is finding out today that there certainly is a God who he rejected. I was talking to a famous former atheist a number of years ago. I believe it was Paul Johnson. Used to be a professor at USC in law and also philosophy. I think I have his name right, Paul Johnson. He has written a number of books. Disproving Darwin was one of them. I met him when I was working a lot with the Institute in Seattle, which escapes my memory in the moment. But I used to work with them a lot. And they did a lot of work on the intelligent design. And we were discussing something we both discovered. He, of course, much more highly educated than I am, me, we just with practical experience, that so often when we find hardcore atheists, there is an element of sometimes they're just really intellectually honest, and there's stuff in their life they don't want to give up. I mean, like deep sin, stuff, junk, pornography, sexual sin generally. I'm not saying that's true of all atheists, but I'm saying it's true of a lot of them. And Paul said the same thing, that he totally agreed. And so it was funny that Stephen Hawking should come out then later, years later, and talk about so freely about pornography and his enjoyment of it and be such a confirmed atheist. Because if there were a God, then intellectually honest people would have to, like, listen to what God has to say about morality and purity. And they would have to sort of rein in their desires and subject themselves, and they don't want to do it. So I think it really is kind of an ultimate rebellion. It's a sad thing that Stephen Hawking has died today with not understanding, really, eternity, willingly not wanting to know about eternity, but he knows about it now. Hillary Clinton made some comments in India that I wanted to play more than I'm going to have time to play here. It's just amazing. She was talking to this group, today's conclave. It was called Mumbai, India. And I'm sure you've heard this in other outlets, but I want you to hear it because I want you to remember that this could have been your president. this woman, Hillary Clinton, could have been the president of the United States if things had not gone the way they did in 2016. Let's listen to clip six.
We do not do well with white men, and we don't do well with married white women. And part of that is an identification with the Republican Party and a sort of ongoing pressure to vote the way that your husband, your boss, your son, whoever, believes you should.
All right, she said a lot more things than that, but that was her explanation. The parts of the country that voted for her, she said, were more prosperous, more forward-thinking, and Trump had the dumb people like you and me. She said it was like a reality TV campaign. She goes on to say, if you remember, Trump started his campaign attacking immigrants because he knew that in many parts of the country, and let me just hasten to add, in many parts of the country where there aren't many immigrants, he was able to scapegoat immigrants. If you have problems like you are not happy with your job, you probably don't think you have gotten enough advancement, you're working for a woman now and you don't like it. Whatever the reason was, he stirred that up. And anti-immigrant feeling, because so virulent, thanks to his rhetoric, that it was a big motivator to a lot of voters in certain parts of the country. If you look at the map, there is all that red in the middle that Trump won. I won the coasts. The places that represent 2/3 of America's gross domestic product. I won places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward. And his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people getting rights. You didn't like women getting jobs. You don't want to see that Indian American succeeding more than you are. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it. Those are her remarks in Mumbai. And, you know, it's astounding. I honestly think, having watched her so many years now, that she has lied so much, I'm not sure even she knows when she's lying and when she's telling the truth and what reality is and what reality is not. But her premise, of course, is that she lost because all the smart people in those, like down in Miami, Los Angeles, West Coast, New York City, those are the smart people. Those are the people. It's this nasty red part of the country where we're all backwards and we hate black people. We don't want to work for women. We don't want women's rights. Really? That describes all of you, right? Those of you listening to this show. This is just, how can you defend such idiocy? Sorry, I just don't. How can you defend that? You know, I was thinking, this is an interesting segue. I was thinking when I was watching Billy Graham's funeral, which I loved, and if you still haven't seen it, please go to our Facebook page. We have a great link there where you can watch it. I was just thinking of all the stereotypes of Southerners as being, you know, ignorant, backward, you know, they don't understand, just like Hillary Clinton just described. I guess I don't need to add anything more to that, you poor, dumb Southerners. And I thought of, as I watched Billy Graham and his children, Billy Graham, his son, Franklin, and the sisters speak, you were reminded in Living Color of the fact that it's a kind of dumb to think that IQ follows geography. I thought of the intellect, the common sense, the collective knowledge in that tabernacle as people praised God and remembered Billy Graham and his accomplishments. It's just a big, like, proof that this is just nonsense. But I guess the one bright spot today for all of us is to remember that she didn't win. Thank God Hillary Clinton is not our president. Can you imagine? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.